Welcome to Women Entrepreneurs Radio. I'm your host, Deborah Bailey. And when I started this show in 2008, I was on a mission to promote women-owned businesses and help women succeed by providing resources and valuable tips from other women and men, small business owners. In each interview, my guests speak openly about their triumphs, the scary times, and tough decisions they have to make along the way. Women Entrepreneurs Radio is about showing women how to harness their natural strengths to achieve success on their own terms. Hi, everyone. Welcome to Women Entrepreneurs Radio, and I'm your host, Deborah Bailey. I'm really glad that you could join me today, and if you're listening to this on Podomatic, you can also find the show on iTunes. Do a search for Women Entrepreneurs Radio, or you can come to womenentrepreneursecrets.com, and there you'll find links for the different places you can listen to the show, and also there's an archive of shows going back several years. It's now going to be on Liveson. There's a link there as well. A few shows are being moved there every month, so you can check out what some of the past shows were like as well. So I hope you'll do that. So we're going to get started today with my guest. Megan Cavallari has worked on more than 100 film scores as performer, arranger, conductor, or composer. She's composed for the LA Kings, has worked on 25 television shows, 16 stage musicals, and written hundreds of songs, jingles, and assorted musical offerings. She launched the Talk Foundation Project, where she records the thoughts and observations of terminally ill children. And she also faces the challenges of raising an 11-year-old daughter with juvenile arthritis. Welcome, Megan. I'm really glad to have you here.
Thank you. Thank you so much.
We were talking earlier about the fun and challenge of being a composer and all the things that you're doing, and you know, I really want to hear more about that, and so the listeners could also hear more about that as well. But you know, I just want to know just a little bit if you could share how you got started in this field. I think this is really so interesting, so exciting. And, you know, I think most people wonder, how in the world do you get into this kind of thing?
Well, this is really interesting, Deborah. I started writing music very young, and I was very fortunate when I was growing up. My parents were educators, and I started writing music. Well, the first time I got paid for writing music was when I was 15. I wrote my first musical, mm-hmm. and I'm from outside Philadelphia, Springfield, Pennsylvania, and I wrote a musical called The Emperor's New Clothes, and it was at the Swarthmore's Players Club, which was outside Philadelphia, mm-hmm. and I realized right away that I found there was a group of grown-ups who wanted me to write the musical. Half the grown-ups wanted me to write the musical, and the other half of the grown-ups didn't want me to write the musical. And were scared that the theater would, you know, go under. Mm-hmm. And the other half of the adults thought that it would be a great idea for me to write the musical and really liked my music. And half the adults walked out and thought it was crazy to put a teenager in charge of the musical and be, you know, the fate of the theater was in like my hands. And the other ones were like, let's go with Megan, and gave me $75, which when you're 15 years old is a lot of money. A lot of donuts. And so I realized right then and there that you have to find the people who are your people, who are going to pay you to do what you love, and just they're going to be people who are not going to be your people, who are never going to pay you to do what you love. And so you just have to move on and and get to the people who love what you do and pay you. And mm-hmm. I think learning that early when I was 15 years old was probably the best lesson of my life. And so, because if I didn't learn that lesson, I might have been knocking on the doors of the people who don't like my music and going, why? And wondering, you know, because if you are an artist, particularly, you know, woman composer, there's 1 or 2% of us who actually make a living at this. And women in the arts is such a small minority. you have to have really thick skin, and you have to make sure that you're knocking on dozen more doors than our counterparts, you know, the men who are out there. And it's that's just a fact. So you're going to be rejected a lot. And if you look at that as rejection as a part of getting to the yes, then it's not a big thing. So you have to just look at the big picture. Like, if I get rejected, you know, 25 times, then I'm going to, it's a numbers game, I'm going to get to a yes. So that's sort of how I look at it. So that lesson really right on, Deborah, was like, get to my people, because my people hire me. My people hire me over and over. My people tell their friends to hire me. My people invite their friends who are directors, who are producers, to see my film, you know, the scores that I have in them. They ask me for songs. They ask me for main titles. My people listen to my new links. You know, they go have lunches with me. I go and support them. I put money into their films. You know, I hang out with them. And that just, you know, and I think it's like that in every business. You find your people and you expand on that. And those are your people, and you keep building that network of people. And that's really how I do my business. And I think that's really important. And if you keep like knocking on the wrong doors, you're going to get really, you're going to get feel really down about yourself pretty quickly. And you just have to move on for that. And from that, and you just have to also know as an artist that there's just naturally a lot of rejection. And if you know that, like, okay, you're going to send your music in, and that was an opportunity for you to write a lot of music, and you might not have been right for it, or maybe they had somebody else in mind all along, or maybe there was some political thing and you didn't get it, or maybe something else happened, or maybe you got it and you celebrate, but you have to keep going back to the plate. You have to keep going and going and going and going. That's really what I've learned by doing this. And, you know, I've been really, really happy to be working so long and to be working on so many projects that, you know, I barely have any time to do anything else but, you know, write my music and, you know, raise my daughter and, you know, keep, you know, do the Talk Foundation and play a little ice hockey along the way and, you know, have fun with my friends and do, you know, charitable, you know, things that I love doing and things, you know, like that. And, you know, create, I also like to create, shows and films and things like that. But I think that it all stems back to, the love of doing the things I like to do. And that is, you know, the love of storytelling. And that is, I tell stories through music. And that's what my job is, storytelling through music. That's what I like to sell. I like to sell my music of storytelling. So that's my job.
I love that.
Yeah. Whether it's a song, a score, you know, a musical, you know, I'm selling the storytelling through music. That's what great, I think, composers do, and that's what I love, a great score that tells a story and has character to it, you know, or a great song that has a great great hook or a great story, you know. Everybody identifies with a great song.
Well, you know, we were talking earlier about, you know, you had a lot of things to do in a short time. And I'm just wondering, you know, from the standpoint of you creating these things, I mean, when you have a deadline, how does that work? You know, you've got to tell the story with music. I mean, it just seems to me like a deadline like that would just, I would just completely be dried up. I wouldn't even know what to express, you know, what to do.
It's really interesting. It's almost like an adrenaline rush in a way. I had an experience where over this weekend we had a lot of power outages because of it was raining so much. So we didn't have a lot of electricity. We had electricity on and off. I have a 12-year-old without a cell phone. She's going nuts. She doesn't know what to do. She can't text. She can't FaceTime. She can't Twitter. She can't do anything. So I have to entertain my 12-year-old daughter. I have to write music. I haven't gotten a brief. A brief is information from a director, producer, or music supervisor on what music you have to write for a film or TV show or songs. And those were due on Tuesday. I received that on, 11 o'clock in the morning. It was due the next day. And, I had three songs to write. And I wrote two of them with, my writing partner, Jacques. And we were just busy, pulling all nighters to get that done. Mm-hmm. And that means just writing music and writing overnight. And I have a group of musicians I work with, assistants I work with, great mixer, great singers, and just people I just pull and just go, are you busy tomorrow at 10:30? Can you sing these two songs? And they're like, can you send me the music? And you just say, no, I'm writing it. And they're like, got it. You know what I mean? And they're just showing up and they're like, how's it going? And you're like, it's going to go like this. And he just sings it and you just mix it and you're just running to get it into the, to play it for the music supervisor. And they're going, and you gotta get to this, and pardon my language, everything you sell has to be a hell yeah. Mm-hmm. It can't be a kinda yeah. Or can't be a maybe yeah. Mm-hmm. It's gotta be the yeah. That's the sell. There's no maybe in Hollywood because there are too many talented people here. Mm-hmm. And there's too much at stake. There's too much money at stake. And film and TV are really great product. And millions of people and the world is watching. So you have to be on top of your game. So it has to be really great. So when the music supervisor says, I'm doing Diary of a Wimpy Kid Part 3, mm-hmm. you have to write songs that fit that 13-year-old mindset of a boy on a road trip with his grandmother in a car, and how does that sound, and what is that melody, and what are the instrumentations of that, and who's the singer, and you have to try and hit it out of the park the first time, because you don't have another time at that. So, and you have to write like two of those songs and maybe another song for this kind of movie for that music supervisor. And then, you get notes from that night, and then you get another brief the next day for a bunch of other stuff. So you just, but I'm in a place where I love what I do, but it's a lot of pots on the stove, mm-hmm. and it's constantly changing. Mm-hmm. And at the same time, what I like to do, Deborah, is I also like to create things myself. Like I have an Irina Sendler opera that I'm writing, and Irina Sendler was a really brave woman in Poland who saved 2,500 Jewish children from the Warsaw Ghetto. Mm-hmm. And I started writing it last summer, and I just saw a picture of her with a child, and I thought, who is this woman? And I started researching about her and all her ways of getting these young children out of the ghetto. Mm-hmm. And it was incredible and inspiring. So I just started writing an opera. I'd never written an opera before. I've written a lot of musicals before. Wow. And I just started writing about her, and it just took off. Mm-hmm. So now I have 3/4 of the way done my first draft. Wow. I have a recording studio here. So I'm doing all the writing, and I have a couple friends who come over and sing all the parts. And, it's so much fun. And so now I'm at a place now where I'm sending it out to different symphonies.
Right.
To have them premiere it. So it's like a machine. So that's another thing that I'm doing. So I'm at a place that I love self-generating besides the work for hire. Mm-hmm. And I think that's really important for women and for all people who are entrepreneurs. Besides the work for hire stuff, self-generating is so incredibly important. Mm-hmm. And it's really fun because it comes from you. It's inspired by you, and it's something you can go out there and sell and you believe in and you love. So I always have side projects like that, Deborah. That's always so much fun. And I'm like the busy woman, like running the nonprofit, and people are always like, when do you have time to do that? And I'm like, you know what? It's like, why not? Right. I mean, if you love what you do, it's, there's always time to do it,
right?
And there's no excuses not to do it. I don't think there's excuses not to do something that you love.
Mm-hmm.
You know, people mm-hmm. can always make up excuses for things. Mm-hmm. You know, you can always have excuses, or you can all sit there and watch. I mean, my feeling is like you can watch TV or you can make TV, you know, you can say, boy, that show's really great. Or you can say like, wow, I think I want to make a show like that.
Right.
There's people who can watch it, or there's people who can do it. Mm-hmm. And I was always interested in doing it.
Mm-hmm.
So mm-hmm. for me, that's my, like, what I like to do, what I love to do
mm-hmm.
is create it.
Wow.
And, you know, sometimes I like watching it too. I mean, like, you know, I'm like anybody else. So I'm like, oh man, I love that Wire. I love the character Omar. Man, I can watch that show forever, you know, but that's a great show. I love that writing, and I love that main title. I love everything about that. But there's other things, you know, you just like to write. You like to, you know, get with your friends and come up with TV shows and sell them. I mean, that's,
right.
I've done that before too. I mean, that's another side of who I am, what I do. But
uh-huh.
I love hearing about my friends. I'm excited when my friends sell a show. Mm-hmm. I love reading their scripts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, LA is such a creative place,
mm-hmm.
you know, and New York, you know, there's so many creative people, and I love the creativity mm-hmm. in places. I mean, places all over that have such creative people and things.
Right.
And I think I salute that. I think creativity is amazing. I salute that in people.
Do you ever get like an idea of, I would have done this a little differently, or even if you love what they did, you know, I mean, as a composer, do you get certain ideas when you see what other people are doing, you know, one way or the other, you're inspired, or maybe you see other things that you would have done if you had done that
tour? Yeah, I probably, the biggest one I say is The Birds by Alfred Hitchcock,
mm-hmm.
because
mm-hmm.
Alfred Hitchcock didn't use the score for that. And I'm always like, well, Bernard Herrmann was like, you know, who did the score for all his other movies, like Psycho and everything uh-huh. else. I'm like, Bernard Herrmann was like just sitting around, you know. Why didn't he use Bernard Herrmann? He's one of the greatest film composers of all time.
Uh-huh.
So yeah, I if I could have ever scored a movie, I would have scored The Birds, which has no film score. And I would, you know, I wasn't alive, of course, but if I could go back in time and score a movie, it would be Hitchcock, The Birds, because there is no score, and there should have been a score. And it's all these birds attacking people. So that would be fantastic to score, you know, because it's a psycho kind of score, and see a lot of strings and lots of brass and lots of French horns and stuff.
Yeah.
So that would probably be the score I would want to do.
Oh,
I would say that would be the score. Yeah, The Birds.
But it's one of those movies that, you know, you see and you're like, I don't know if I want to see that again.
Yeah, exactly. It's really disturbing, isn't it? Yeah, and that's the one I want to score. Well, it had no score. It's like, what happened? Did they just forget to put the music in that movie or something?
Yeah,
what happened to that movie? Yeah. It's like,
oh, my God. Yeah, I watch a lot of, like, old movies. And, you know, I used to watch them back in the day when they were, like, on regular TV. But now it's like on like Turner, classic movies I'll watch, and it's kind of interesting how some movies have like certain kind of scores depending on, you know, when they were made. But some of them you're hearing music in the background, and I'm saying, wow, you know, some, I hadn't even really thought about it, you know, until I kind of made a point to pay attention, because you kind of miss it when it's not there. You know, when you don't hear the music, then you're kind of, it seems odd. So I realized a lot of that goes on, and I guess as a viewer, if it wasn't really pointed out to me, I may not have even realized that that wasn't there. You know, I know when it's missing.
It's amazing component. It's, you know, a film score should whisper in the ear what it want, you know, what you want the audience to feel.
Mm.
It's like another component of
mm-hmm.
emotion
mm-hmm.
that should trigger the audience's response,
mm-hmm.
whether it's horror, mm-hmm. whether it's laughter, whether it's emotion,
uh-huh.
you know, and it's all the composers, like a storyteller trying to bring the people in. And it can really do, weave everything together. Mm-hmm. I had a TV movie that I just did, Cancer Rebellion,
mm-hmm.
and all these interviews with, teenagers with cancer, and, it needed a through line, a score with through line, but I scored it a lot with, instead of tragedy, the director and I, Hernan, used hope, like a very inspiring, score. So instead of playing the tragedy of these kids, because they're heroes, we scored it with hope. And so the score is very emotionally uplifting. Mm-hmm. And that was I thought that was a really great choice to use, that Hernan suggested, because it's uplifting and it helps the audience stay engaged, because it's such a tough subject of teens with cancer. And I got that film because of the work I do with the Talk Foundation. I usually get a film score because of people knowing about my film scores or seeing my name on television or in the movies, or one of my friends from NYU I went to school with, I scored one of their movies, or somebody I know from out here, I've scored their movies, knows about me, or I did a demo for somebody's movie, or somebody's heard of me and they've asked me to score their film. But this one, I have a foundation called the Talk Foundation, and I record children with life-threatening illnesses and also teenagers. And they tell me their stories, and I've been doing it for close to 12 years. And it's a really incredible process. Where the children open up, and my daughter, who has juvenile arthritis and uveitis, chronic autoimmune diseases, I noticed that a lot of doctors talk to me and don't really talk to children. So a lot of the communication goes on between adults. And a lot of the children and teenagers have a lot to say. So that component was missing in a lot of medicine. So I sort of like provide that for the patient. So what has happened was, in all these recordings, a lot of my talkers, as I call them, they start interviewing each other. So I might say to someone like, you know, Jamie, who has leukemia, you know, stage 3, why don't you talk to Jason, who's just been diagnosed, and why don't we go over together to his house or something? And so what happens is my talkers have now become interviewers, and so that's really taken off as well. So that's been a really interesting evolution at the Talk Foundation. So that's been a really, really wonderful and uplifting thing that's happened with our foundation. And again, it's been a really great process. And with the foundation, one of the best things about it is, you know, one of the last questions I always ask is, if one of your friends had your diseases, what would you tell them? And that's sort of when they become the expert and start telling them about, well, when the nurse says or the doctor says this is not going to hurt much, it's going to hurt a lot, you know, when the needle, you know, goes through your skin, it's not going to hurt, but when it hits your bone, you're going to really feel it. And, you know, they just go through, you know, 15 minutes worth of all their knowledge, and it really empowers them because they've gone through so much. They've gone through so much and they're so knowledgeable, and they really, by the end of the conversation, they really show that they've become a real expert in this. And that they've gone through this whole journey, and they feel really great about themselves because they've really learned a lot, and they've become like these little mini experts in the field, and they're very empowered at that point. And they really love to communicate that to other children or other teenagers about that. And I'm sort of like this sort of conduit to other people and other children, other teens and things like that. And, you know, I didn't know that this would, the Talk Foundation, you know, it was sort of like, oh, let me just try this. But now that we've been doing it, you know, I've been recording and mixing, and, you know, sometimes I share it on the internet, sometimes I don't. Sometimes I make CDs for, you know, the holiday season, you know, if children want, you know, to give it to their family or friends or things. And I've been doing it, and the children really like it. The teenagers particularly like it a lot. And now the teenagers are like, you know, running the board. They're doing it themselves. They're sort of like, I got it from here, Megan. You don't have to do it anymore. You know, they're all, I know how to press play and record. I got it from here. You know, they look at me. I can take the headphones now. I can see the red. I see we're going into the red here. You're clipping. You're like, they think they're all Think of all the recording engineers. You're clipping. Can we bring this down a little? they're all talking technical terms. It's really funny. So it's been a great experience.
Oh my God.
Really great.
Really terrific. It's wow.
Yeah. So
important work.
Thank you.
That you're doing, really, to give a voice to people who, they don't get that voice, as you said, because the doctor, you're talking to the parents, and there they are going through it. And, that's very important.
And you can always find me. People always ask where they find me, and they can find me at, thetalkfoundation.org, mm-hmm. or they can they can find me on my website, which is Megan, MEGANCAVA, as in Victor, ALLARI.com. And you can go to, the Talk Foundation on my website. You just click on it and you can find me. And I'm in Los Angeles in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
And, you can get me or, if you prefer like a child to come with me or something like that, we can, or a teenager or something. I got plenty of volunteers who help us out.
That's great. Oh my God.
That's we're fantastic. Always willing. And it's always, it's always fun. It's really interesting that it's really a highlight for a lot of kids.
Mm-hmm.
And, it's really a fun thing. And they like it. And a lot of them like to do it a couple of times. I mean, they're really mm-hmm. liking, this happened here. And now that I'm in remission, I wanted to talk about this and this and this.
Mm-hmm.
And, so that's, and what I learned along the way. So mm-hmm. I call it repeat business, and so it's really been fun to do that. So it came from a place of need, but now it's really it's a pleasure, and I feel very honored to be able to listen to these people who are really who are heroes who go through these things that adults go through, but go through it at an age of 6 or 7 years old and mm-hmm. become very wise souls because of it.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
It's great
to
be part of that. So
that's fantastic. Megan, we're just going to take a very short break. And,
great. Okay. Thanks.
We'll be right back.
Hi, this is Deborah. Not only am I host of Women Entrepreneurs Radio, but I'm also a writer and coach. I've learned that making professional changes calls for a change in mindset, and that's not always easy to do. In my book, Think Like an Entrepreneur, Transforming Your Career and Taking Charge of Your Life, you'll learn the 5 steps to thinking like an entrepreneur so that you can move from idea to action. You'll also get information on how to manage fear of failure and how to banish self-doubt. And you'll receive lots of motivation to pick you up and point you in the right direction when you're facing the emotional and mental challenges that come with making life changes. In fact, one reviewer said, "The book gave me ideas to match with my own feelings. This book is clear, straightforward. All tips are really good and easy to apply." I couldn't agree more. So get your copy today of Think Like an Entrepreneur, Transforming Your Career and Taking Charge of Your Life. It's available in print, ebook, and audiobook on Amazon.com.
Hi, everyone. We're back with Megan Cavallari, and she's worked on more than 100 film scores as performer, arranger, conductor, composer, and she was just telling us a bit about her Talk Foundation project. So I think that's really fantastic work that she's doing. So hopefully you'll check out her website, and we're also going to be posting that with the show bio here, so you can find that there as well. So Megan, you also play ice hockey.
Well, I know, just in case, you need to know some other odd things about me. I'm from Philadelphia. You can hear that Philadelphia accent right there. The joy and love of hockey, runs deep in the gene pool. And I am still a Flyers fan, although I'm a Kings fan. I did write for the LA Kings. I'm not not their official composer by any capacity. They have someone who does that, but I had written for them for a number of years with my friend Aaron Brenner, mm-hmm. who I still work with. He's a great producer out here, and I still love collaborating with him. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I always wanted to play, and as it's interesting, I was writing some music for the Kings, and I saw this, you know, and this is really funny because I quickly go through my email, and you know how you get just too much email? It's just too much, right? You get so many ads, and you keep going like, delete, 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 get me off this, unsubscribe, unsubscribe. But anyway, you know, I love all the Kings stuff, and I'm getting all this email from the Kings, and it says, like, go to hockey camp. And I'm like, oh, yeah, what the heck? I'll go to hockey camp. But what I didn't notice was there were a bunch of kids in the picture. Mm-hmm. And so I thought it was, like, for adults, but it really was for children. So I sign up for hockey camp. This is really embarrassing. But I get all the gear, right? I find it in Los Angeles, which, by the way, is ridiculously difficult. Not on the East Coast or in Boston or in Canada. In the whole country, they got plenty of gear. But in Los Angeles, you know, you have to go to a lot of stores. So I get my gear, and I'm like, you know, I'm not going to – I go, and they give me my shirt. And, of course, I'm, you know, I don't notice that it's youth. So I'm like, okay, youth. I'm a youth. I'm pretty skinny here. I'm like 106 pounds. You know, I can get youth large. That's fine for me. So, you know, I don't notice that there's no adult shirts, sweaters, we call them. You know, so I'm like, yeah, I'm a youth. So I put Cavallari on the back of my shirt, you know, I'm clueless. So I go to hockey camp with a bunch of kids, right? It's the first day of camp.
Oh,
and all these, quote, hockey moms are dropping their kids off at camp.
Oh, my gosh.
And there's me. And granted, I have been on the ice, like, since I was, like, 7. And I wasn't a good skater back then, let me tell you. I was a swimmer, right? So I really don't know how to skate at all. And there are all these, like, 8- and 10-year-old boys, and they are so good at skating. They're whizzing around and boost, 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 boost. And I can barely stand up on the ice. And there's Daryl Evans, and he's the ice hockey – I mean, he's the skating coach for the L.A. Kings.
Wow.
I mean, this guy is coaching, like, Anshay Kopitar. I mean, he's, like – he skates like a dream. And he sees the back of my shirt and he goes, okay, Cavallari, get out there. Because I'm like holding on to the side, just like scared out of my mind. Like all these little mites are running around. They're like, skate, 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 skate. And I'm like getting knocked over. And I'm freaking out. I'm like, oh my God, I should have read my email. There are all these children.
Like,
all these mothers are looking at me like, God, can't this woman read? This is like hockey camp for children. And I'm like, man, I should really start to read my email. So anyway, that's how I learned how to play hockey.
Because
I was like, but I always wanted to learn to play hockey. So anyway, that's how I learned to play hockey as an adult with a bunch of kids who are like showing me, they're going about 90 miles an hour faster than me. And there's me holding on to the side for dear life. And I noticed these kids are fearless.
Oh,
and I'm like thinking, God, if I hit this ice, I'm just going to break a finger. I'm not going to be able to pay my bills. I'm like, so anyway, I just decided to be fearless, learn how to skate, took some hockey lessons, you know, ice hockey, like skating lessons, because mm-hmm. it's a different kind of skate and you have to learn how to skate a different way. And I just decided I'd learn how to do it. So I went to hockey camp with a bunch of little kids and it was pretty funny. And so I got a shirt that said hockey mom and I took my daughter to hockey camp with me.
Oh,
and at the same time that Sarah Paulin was talking about being a hockey mom, and I had a shirt that said hockey mom on it, but I actually was a hockey mom. Because I was a mom playing hockey with my daughter. And my daughter was like one of those girls going like, yeah, hey, mom, let's play. Let's hit some pucks. So I was truly a hockey mom. I was not just dropping my kid off.
Oh, my God.
You know, oh, I got to tell you, that, you know, people would be like, Megan, you lost so much weight. And they'd be like, what'd you do? Like, you joined a gym? You got a personal trainer? What are you doing? You like look so thin. And I'm like, kids ice hockey camp. And they'd just be looking at me like, what? What have you gotten yourself into? And I was like, yep. Kids ice hockey camp. Yep, that's it. I know. So it's true. It's true. So I lost a lot of weight at the kids ice hockey camp.
Oh, my God.
So I ended up taking lessons. I got better and better. And I have to tell you that this coach, Daryl Evans, he got such a kick out of me because I have this little gene called determination, and I think it's why I'm a film composer. I think it's why I'm a conductor. I think it's why, you know, when I walk to the podium with a baton in my hand and go, mm-hmm. I'm conducting this orchestra, I just got this determination gene in me. Mm-hmm. And I was determined to play ice hockey. I don't know why. I could not skate for my life. And I was determined not to be the worst person on the ice. That was my first goal. And you also have to understand, I'm a marathoner. I've run about 18 marathons in my life. So I've got that marathon mentality, like, yeah. Oh, cool, halfway there, you know. I only got like another 10 miles to go.
Oh,
so if you're a marathoner, you got that mindset.
Wow.
You know,
that's great.
If you're a marathoner, you don't think, oh no, another 13 miles. You think, great, halfway there. That's how marathoners think, right? They're like, cool, 8 more miles to go. They don't go, oh my God, I'm so tired. I have 3 more miles left. You're like, almost there. That's how you think when you're running a marathon.
Wow.
You're always thinking of the positive.
Uh-huh.
So I got the hockey lessons. Daryl Evans was coaching me. I was running for the Kings, so I always was part of their clinics.
Mm-hmm.
And then I got this terrific coach called Andrei Runsu, and he was from the Russian Dynamo. So he was like unbelievable. He would be like, man, you skate like a Canadian. And I, of course, being an American, thought that was a compliment. But really, it was an insult because he was from the Russian school of skating. Because Americans don't skate, unless you're Mike Modano, you don't skate really well. But I thought being a Canadian skater was pretty damn good. So he would be like, you go around the rink in a squat 5 times, you do your C-curve for me. I'd be like, in a squat? Are you kidding? And then I thought, my ass is going to look so good, so I'm going to do it. Terrible, right? We're women, right? I'm like thinking about my butt, right? I'm like, ooh, and a squat. Okay. My jeans are going to look great. So, you know, I'm like putting the pain through it. And so, you know, I'm losing all this weight. People are like, man, girl, you're looking good. I'm like, yeah, taking ice hockey lessons from Andrei Runsu. And they just be like, what? And then, so now I'm like on some pickup hockey teams with some guys. And the people are like, man, you're a one fit girl. You're a thin. Size 0, that's incredible. And they're like, how do you do it? And I'm like, well, I play hockey on a men's ice hockey league with some men, you know. And they're like, damn, I don't want to do that. Couldn't you join like Jenny Craig or something?
Right. Seems like that would be easier.
It's just like, what is with this Cavallari woman, man? Men's ice hockey, like, couldn't you just join like a women's gym or something? Or, you know, like take some like aerobics or something? Like, why do you have to play on a men's ice hockey team? What is with you? No, so I play on a pickup men's team, a couple of them. And what we do is we rent out rinks, and mm-hmm. and you know, there's a couple girls on it. They tend to be better than me, and it's, I don't skate as much because I'm working a lot. But when I go out there, it's really fun. And you know, the thing I love about hockey and ice hockey is, And when I get hit, you know, I'm the one flying through the air, because if you see guys who play hockey, they're really strong. They're twice as big. They're really fast. They're very muscular. And if they have a lot of like consonants in their name and they're from Finland or Sweden, you want to stay away, because they're really just like, they're going to tap you and you're just going to go flying in the air. And, you know, it's just going to be airbound like a cartoon, and you're just going to have to deal with that. And you just don't want that. But the hockey's like life. I mean, it's poetry at 90 miles an hour.
Mm.
It is hard. It is beautiful. You fall down hard. You got to get up. You got to pull yourself up. There's nobody pulling you up. You have to work as a team. You got your line. You got your special line. I mean, people have your back, but you have to work as a team.
Mm-hmm.
There's not a star because, you know, Sidney Crosby did not win the cup this year. You know, the Penguins won the cup.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, everybody wins. The whole team has to win, from your goaltending to your stars. You know, everybody wins.
Mm-hmm.
So your defense has to be strong. Your offense has to be strong. Your goaltending has to be strong. Your coaching has to be strong. Everyone has to be strong on your team.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a team effort. And, you know, you get hit, you get up. You know, you have a little puck, and it's miraculously, there's a huge man in a tiny, tiny goal, and it's like impossible odds that this puck is going to somehow go either like five hole between his legs or top shelf. Like somehow it's going to get through, and it's going to be a miracle.
Mm-hmm.
And as a team, you're going to get that goal, and you will have 1 second to celebrate that. But you have to get back in the game, because if you don't and you're busy celebrating, the other team's going to score.
Right.
So if you're like busy celebrating, like, the other team's going to score on you.
Mm-hmm.
So you got to get back in the game right away. You know, and you can't rest on your laurels. So it's like, that's why hockey for me is like such a metaphor for life.
Mm-hmm.
It's so beautiful, and it's fun, and it's a little dangerous. It can be incredibly uplifting, and it can be painful, and it can be tragic, but it can be so exhilarating.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just a metaphor. And at the end of the day, it's really a gentleman's sport. I mean, because in hockey, you just go out with everybody from the other side. And there are plenty of times when I've been hit, I am rather small, where the other team's like, oh, my God. Is she okay? And that's the other team. And they're worried about me. Even though they don't want me to get up and, you know, score or anything,
right.
But you know, there it is like it's like but everybody sort of goes out, at least, you know, and we're not professionals or anything by any stretch of the imagination. We're like amateurs. I mean, we're just like, our guys are just, you know, a bunch of people who are like, after work, just get together and you know, play hockey for the fun of it and things. And you know, we all go out afterwards, unless we have to, you know, go home and fall asleep, or, you know, go to our families right away or something like that, or have some work to do. But at the end of the day, we all go out, and doesn't matter what team you're on or anything, you know, might go and discuss the game or something like that, or just go out and just, you know, have fun, you know, and talk. And it's really just a spirit, because the game itself is so intense and so competitive that afterwards you're just like blowing off steam. Because it's so in the moment with such intensity. And, you know, when I see a hockey game, I'm like, they make it look so easy. And it's so impossible. Because you're like, defense, offense, defense, offense, defense, offense. And then sometimes you're like, what am I? What am I? Where am I? What am I doing? Wait a minute. Do I have the puck? Is it on my tape? Is it, you know, okay, here I am. We have the puck now. Which direction am I going? Okay, we're here now. There's the goal. That's it. Okay, we're going this way. That's good. I mean, your brain is like just boom, you know, moving forward. So,
oh my God.
I mean, as you can tell, I'm enthusiastic about this sport.
Yeah, that sounds exciting.
You know, I guess that's me. I'm enthusiastic about things and people.
Yeah.
What I do, and you know, I guess for things that I'm not enthusiastic about, I think they just sort of fall by the wayside.
Right, maybe it's probably a good thing, you know, because you bring that same, you know, those parts of yourself, you bring into everything that you're doing. So, that's what makes it so exciting for you, and also for, you know, people you work with and things that you create. You know, it's all parts of you. you know, I think that's a thing. Maybe a lot of times people don't realize, you know, they segment their life. This is my work. This is my play. This is whatever. And they don't realize, you know, when you can combine all those things and just bring your best to everything you're doing, it just seems like you would really live a much fuller, enjoyable life, really, you know?
Yeah.
Feel better about things, I think.
No, it's true. Yeah. It's true, because if you just do one thing, you know, if I love composing, mm-hmm. and I love being a mom, and that's mm-hmm. fantastic and things, but other things balance you out. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, it's just, you know, it's so important,
yes.
that you have,
yes.
other things in your life to balance yourself out.
Exactly.
And they become part of your personality. And they also keep you sort of honest and keep you in check, because, you know, you can say, Megan, I need this kind of music and I need it done by this day and I need it done by this time and da 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 da, and I'm going to get it done. Mm-hmm. But in hockey, you know, I pretty much suck in hockey. You know, I'm like one of the little, I'm like the kid. Like, if I was like, you know, you would pick me for your swimming team. I'd be one of the first people you'd pick for your swimming team, Deborah. You'd be like, I'm picking Megan. We're doing a marathon thing. I'm picking Megan. But on the hockey team, you'd be like, I'm going with Scott. I'm going with David. Sven. I'm going with Sven. Okay, I guess we can go with Megan over there. Okay, Megan's left. You know what I mean? Okay, we'll take Megan. You know what I mean? But it's good for me.
Right.
You know? Because it's like, it balances me out. Like, oh, geez, we'll have to take Megan. Okay, yeah, we'll take Megan. You know, it's not bad being the worst of something either. You know, there's something to that. You know what I mean? It's like, I mean, I'm not saying I'm the worst, but I'm not like, I'm like, hey, why don't we go with Megan on that ice hockey team? You know, like I'm saying, there's a lot of growth potential to my hockey game, let's just say.
Yeah.
And so for me, it's like, mm-hmm. and sure, there's people on this, you know, mm-hmm. there's first timers, you know, who are just like, do I put this on my knee or do I put this on my elbow? You know, they're like putting their hockey gear on wrong and I'm helping them out. Or they're like, oh my God, can I stand behind you? Because I'm so frightened of that puck coming toward my face. And I'm like, relax, you have a shield on your head. It's, you know, you've got this cage on your face. It's not going to hit you. You'll be fine. But, mm-hmm. you know, I was there once too.
Yeah.
And so,
yeah.
you know, it's, and it's interesting, you know, the sport that's growing the fastest, and this is not just in the United States, but in the world, is female ice hockey.
Really?
And that is really phenomenal,
mm-hmm.
because more women have money. It's an expensive sport.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And it's a very empowering sport, and it was always a men's thing only. So I think it's pretty fascinating that it was a no-no sport for so long, mm-hmm. and it's interesting that this generation and different generations are really taking it up right now.
Mm-hmm.
So,
yeah,
I don't know. I find there's something like every year I go back to one of these. Darrell Evans has these clinics for women,
uh-huh.
and the Kings just offer up equipment for women.
Oh, that's great!
And it's really great because they have all these young girls who can like. You know, for $100 or $120,
uh-huh.
they can take a bunch of, you know, workshops with legendary coach Darrell Evans.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Wow.
And so for women, it's like really empowering.
Right.
And so one of my friends is a sailing instructor, and she was saying that like for $120, you can join this women's group of sailors.
Mm-hmm.
And she's a professional mm-hmm. sailor. And she was saying, like, in Los Angeles, like, how that's growing,
mm-hmm.
like, professional sailors.
That's terrific.
You know, and it was a men's league only,
mm-hmm.
and now there's, like, hundreds of women professional sailors.
Mm-hmm.
So
wow.
it's, like, it's so exciting to see that,
yeah.
you know, and I like her, because she's, you know, really badass. So.
It is, though. It's more opportunities and just more of an experience, you know, experiencing things that maybe you didn't have the opportunity to do before. You know, things like that are really, inspiring and just lets other people know that, hey, this is something you had in mind and you thought, oh, I don't know if I can do this. And then you see that there are other people doing it. And I think that's the representation is really great because then it lets other people know, particularly younger people know that this is something that you can have access to as well. You know, so you could see that it's possible for you as well. I think it's just great.
Yeah.
That the better for everyone. I think, and you know, just want to make a quick note because I'm sure we could continue to talk when you've got deadlines. So I don't want to be the cause of getting something done today. But talking earlier about your daughter and the power outage, it just kind of made me laugh because a few years back we had Hurricane Sandy here in New Jersey, and
oh yeah.
Yeah, different parts of the state got, you know, different damage, but where I am, my power was out for like 2 weeks. And it was getting colder because it was like, we finally got power back like in November. And I can remember I had to like charge up my phone in my car. And then, I was using my, reader, to read books. I have one that kind of glows so I could read. But it was awful because I'm sitting there, I'm like, I can't use the computer. It's dark. It's cold. I'm like, how do people live like this? So I can identify with what she was.
Oh my God, isn't it true? It's really just, oh my gosh. I thought I recognized your accent. You know, the Jersey Philly accent. It's very like, you know, we're going to the Eagles to get some hoagies.
Yes,
God. True. It's the East Coast. It's
yeah,
just the East
it is
Coast
different
thing.
When I hear people,
it's very, but it's very, it's interesting because you know when you're from Philly, you automatically. My friend Eric is from. He's a great screenwriter, Eric Abrams, and we're always talking about this how Philadelphia adopted Bruce Springsteen as a guy from Philly. And that Bruce Springsteen's really not from Philly.
Right.
But if you talk to anybody from Philly, he is from Philly. And everybody from New Jersey basically is like, not really, but we'll accept you people from Philly who think that Bruce Springsteen's from Philly because it's just a Schuylkill. Like, it's just a river. You're just a river off. But we sort of accept you Philadelphia people who think Bruce Springsteen is from Philly because you're sort of adjacent Jersey.
That's true.
So we sort of accept you, but it's not, you're not really correct, but we sort of accept it.
I have a feeling we could talk for hours. So let me.
Thank you so much, Deborah. It's a blast talking to you, really.
Thank you so much for joining me. This has been terrific. And
it's great. Thank you so
thank
much,
you
really.
Time to have this talk. I really enjoyed it. Thank you so much, Megan. It was really great.
Absolutely. Okay, best of luck to you, Deborah.
Okay.
And happy times in Jersey.
Thank you. I'll tell Bruce.
Okay. All right. All right. Take care now.
All right. Bye.
Okay. Talk to you soon. Bye now.
Okay. Bye. Thanks for joining us. You can also join in the conversation on Facebook.com/WomenEntrepreneurs and on the website WomenEntrepreneurSecrets.com. And don't forget to listen in on dvcoach.podomatic.com and on iTunes.